Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Jimmy, Kathleen, and Luke. And today we're going to be covering episodes 2 and 3 of the brand new Netflix original series, Shadow and Bone. Well, before we get going here, Jimmy, do we have some laundry to take care of?
We do. We have a lot of support from the Grishaverse fan base, and it's awesome. We have a couple ones we want to shout out here. We got 2 subreddits, Grishaverse and Shadow and Bone. They have been awesome, Grishaverse especially right now, commenting, collaborating with us. Amazing stuff. We also have 2 Facebook groups that have been amazing with us, commenting and talking about our podcast with us. That's Shadow and Bone, the Netflix series of Leigh Bardugo's Grishaverse. And Shadow and Bone Netflix, The Grisha and 6 of Crows. Those guys have been great. And we have 1 Instagram that has been great helping us out with the shout outs. They're Shadow and Bone Netflix. If you want to follow them, they have a lot of behind the scenes stuff, a lot of extra content, amazing stuff. So check all them out, guys. We appreciate all the support.
For me, I'm just going to say I fucking love the show. I'm so in. I love both storylines. I know there's some differing opinions on that, but I'm so in on Alina and Mal. I'm the resident stan of the relationships in the squad. So I'm going to just be talking about love for a lot of it.
We knew you would be.
Yeah. It's good.
I don't want to sound hyperbolic here, but this show is the shit and I'm in love. And I was a little nervous after the first episode because I was getting excited. I loved the world building. I loved the characters. And it just felt like there was so much mystery to learn about the powers and stuff like that. And man, dude, episode 2 and 3 did not disappoint. We got introduced to probably my favorite character so far. We got a face introduction finally from General Kerrigan. Mm-hmm. He's amazing. Love Logan from Westworld.
He's a pretty face, too.
Oh, so my gosh, hot.
Man. I'm just, this show is doing it for me. I think it's great. And I cannot wait to watch more.
Yeah, I think I said this last week. Brian was the one who told us to try this out, and I was the first one to watch it to see if it was worth it. And I thought it was definitely worth it after episode 1. And then I was the first person to get to watch episode 2. And you guys were talking about how much you loved episode 1. And I was like, if you guys loved episode 1, baby, episode 2, just rise, rise, rise.
Man, the acting is so good. I love all the characters. And we even get... shout out Harry Potter and Britannia. We get Madam Hooch.
Damn, I was gonna see. I was like, I was literally gonna say,
of course,
he's gonna be my boy or girl here and call that for me.
Oh, yeah, that was a great scene too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Magic comes from pain, baby. She hit her right on the shoulder. Like, come on, get it up. Like,
I had a lot of thoughts about who I had in my head as an image of who could be a king in this kind of story. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I was pretty surprised that they went the like fatter, just regular
traditional
kind of
king.
Robert Baratheon.
Exactly. Yeah, but true. Yeah.
Did we even have a mention of the king in the first episode? Did we know there was a king yet? Because I don't feel like
I only knew the general.
It. Like, right.
Yeah. I don't think king came up.
I'm not sure.
No, that's good. Just more world building. I like it being trickled in like this. Not too much.
Speaking of world building, I really loved when Kerrigan was like, it's not magic, it's science. Like, it's you can't make it out of nothing. You can't make magic out of nothing. There has to be something. And I love that. So fucking cool.
Taking the realistic approach.
A little
right?
bit more Full Metal Alchemist for me, baby.
Yeah.
So I guess overarching summary of the 2 plot lines in episode 2, on the Ketterdam side of it, it's really just Kaz, Inej, and Jesper figuring out how they're like the logistics of crossing the fold. We get introduced to Helene, who is, I guess, Inej's owner and the owner of the menagerie. And we get introduced to the conductor, which we'll find out the conductor is going to be their way of getting safe passage across the fold. And then on the Alina side of things, in Krabirsk in East Ravka, I guess the summary would be she is being taken to the little palace and her convoy going over there gets attacked by Furidans. And then she is escorted personally by General Kerrigan, and we find out a little bit more about who he is and what's going on there. And that's really all of episode 2 in a nutshell.
Right.
Kathleen, would you like to be escorted personally? by Kerrigan?
Boy, fucking would I. Oh, my God. But going back, I want to talk about when Kaz and Inej were kind of fighting over there's only X amount of hours. Like, we don't have enough time. She's like, I can't go. And we're showing the tattoo. Is that because she's still owned by somebody else? Like, yeah. That's like her tattoo of like, I'm not free.
Yeah.
So that's why the her whole arc in this one is like, I need to get my freedom.
Yep.
Okay. He was like, then maybe you're just not coming. I was like, they're about to break up.
I was so surprised by the conversation that happens this episode when I think it's in this episode where we find out that she can't kill.
Yeah, she right? won't kill.
That just seems like the opposite of her character. Yeah. That was wild for me, especially when she is meeting Helene for the first time. You see all of the knives that she has on her. Like, what is she doing with that stuff?
So do we think the reason she can't kill is because of the faith that she follows, which the conductor comments on? Like, oh, you're also a follower of the faith. Did you guys pick up on that?
Yeah. So that's actually really interesting because the way I read that scene is that it was a certain situation she can't kill, like almost as if there was a spell that is like, I'm can't kill Jimmy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but I can get Luke. I can enlist Luke to kill him because he kind of is like, what's the difference between me killing him and you? You know what I
Jesper?
Mean?
Jesper?
Yeah.
Jesper kind of says that what Jesper says made me think she can kill other people, just not that specific person for some reason.
But at the end of the day, wasn't she going to execute him unless Kaz stepped in?
Yeah, I don't know.
So I think she could.
I think it's just an I won't kind of thing. She
okay.
has, she has some kind of principle.
So I just read it
She's
wrong.
Dexter, man. And she only kills certain people or won't kill.
Moral code, yeah.
That was a great scene, though, when Kaz saves the day and she just chucks the knife and it lands like right next to her while she's still holding the other knife like to his throat. She seems like she can get shit done. I just don't get the whole... I hope there's more to the...
There's gotta be.
Yeah, to her not killing, because we need to find out.
Yeah, they bring it up a few times. I doubt this is just going to be the end of it. They're going to have to say why.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not to jump too far ahead, because Kathleen, I think you... Or one of you two, I don't remember who just said the religious thing. Maybe that was even Brian. But I took it as... She does not follow the religion because of the conversation that happens in the second in episode three, right? When she's at the wall saying like, the only reason I care about this is because it's something her mother made, right? Do we think she's religious?
I got that impression. Yes. That's why she was conflicted about killing someone.
Yeah. When the conductor brings it up, you could see it makes her pause.
Okay.
While we're still on an edge, I just want to say that scene with her and all of her knives and then pulling the one out of her hair and the guy was like, that's new. Like, I love that they have obviously dealt with her before, but so cool. And also that hair, I was like, oh, sis,
yeah,
that's
baby.
My girl. But also more of like that she's got, what's the Shadowbender one called? Bri, do you have that on top of your head?
Well,
what,
nah,
we think
I don't.
What we think she is? Okay, so we would just
only one, so yeah,
a Shadowmancer, yeah.
Yeah.
A Nothingmancer. No, but, so dope. I can't wait. We're going to figure out why and how she can do that, too. So I can't wait to find out what type of Grisha she is. She's got to be one.
And going back to the faith thing that you said, Luke, also, we're going to fast forward way into the future here for episode three. But she, you know, does a little praying when the.
Oh, you're right.
When the train
yeah,
is.
Yeah, when the train starts to hit some issues.
You're right. OK, I misread Make that. Then. So she is super religious.
And I think it's an East Rafkin religion, because when the conductor states, oh, you follow the faith too. In the subtitles, it says he says some unfamiliar words, but it says in Old Rafkin. So I think it's an Old Rafkin religion that both of these people are following, which doesn't add up. Why would these Westerners be following a Rafkin religion?
All right. If we're good with Inej, I do want to highlight some awesome Kaz scenes that happened this episode, because when he has that like Sherlock kind of moment when he's talking to the girl that basically fesses up Poppy, that was just so good for me, because it just shows you how knowledgeable and confident he is and just observant, which makes him such a good leader and just is so okay. I'm so okay with him not being a Grisha or having even combat powers, because that's his skill and he just does it so well. And he's so good at acting, man. I fucking love that guy.
Yeah.
Kaz is sweet.
I was going to say that episode definitely proved our point from the last episode, or at least our question about whether he has any powers or could fight, because Pecker takes care of him pretty easily.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's also just a little bit more world building about being like, someone from West Ravka wouldn't call it West Ravka because they believe that they are just Ravka. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's cool, small thing.
And you see it later when they do that, you know.
And speaking of Pekka,
yes,
we got some good stuff there too, where it was very like subtle dialogue, but you pick it up if you're looking for it, where Kaz clearly has a history with Pekka, but not to the point where Pekka recognized him.
Yeah.
So like, what the hell can that be? And what I said last podcast episode, how maybe there's something with Alina in connected to Kaz's past. I think that's just off the table because now it's completely my attention shifted to what the hell does he have going on with the behind the scenes with Pekka?
Yeah. And it's also showing how ballsy he is because it's episode two, that same episode where he says, like, have we ever made a deal before?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
if he would have said yes, you'd been like, oh shit, yeah. You're dead, bro. Like, yeah. You know.
No, it's cool to see. Because I totally, from the first episode, had an impression that I think Kaz was bigger than he is.
Yeah.
I think in the underworld or the barrel, whatever we want to call it.
Yeah, and Poppy calls him the bastard pretty much compared to Pekka.
I think that's a name for the bastard of the barrel is like from the books. Like that's what people call him because I've read that. Yeah. I read that when I read that article on the first episode, someone said like he's still the bastard of the barrel. And so when they said it in the episode, it like triggered
just
something.
Too close to Jon Snow's name. I love him even more now.
Yeah. speaking of articles, Kathleen, it is so hard not to get any spoilers.
I didn't read for these ones because I don't
I mean I'm not reading anything, but like I'm doing a lot of the Bingetown Instagram stuff and Twitter stuff, and I'm trying so hard not to really repost anything yet because I don't want to know anything, and it's a lot. I mean, people are binging it, so they're already binging the end of the series stuff. Mm-hmm. That's
always a struggle when there's source material too to not get spoiled.
True.
Yeah.
All right, so who else we have from this storyline is just Helene. She was more interesting than I thought she was going to be. I feel like she's cool. She was composed and in control. Like, I don't know. I didn't know what I expected from her. Yeah, she just seems like...
I don't think she was cool from the perspective of, like, the protagonists, but she was definitely, like, intelligent and a schemer. Yeah, definitely a good obstacle. But at the same time, I think she just, like, owns Inej and wants due payment for her property, but kind of just this web of lies that she pitted Inej to assassinate the conductor like through Poppy. Like that was very well thought out and methodical. Yeah. So I appreciated that. And if Kaz was just like, hey, I loved the line where he said, you assume that your freedom and the conductor's life are one or the other, you know, like I can get both. And boy, does he, when he puts all his cards down on the table and like puts up the Crows Club, I love that.
Yeah.
Kaz is a hot boy.
Fuck yeah, he is.
I killed him on the Bank He'll Marry last week, and now I don't know. But Jesper, come on. After this, Jesper's even hotter.
The man.
Somehow. Mm. He really is. But going back, I don't want to jump too around, but I just want to shout out to Poppy because he was fabulous and I love him.
Didn't expect that kind of character in this world, too, which was cool to see.
Yeah. I love it. He's like, what do you want, dirty hands?
And you going back to Helene, you can also see that Kaz respects her intelligence and her business savvy when he's talking to Jesper about, you know, I can't just go in and say, you know, I want Inej now because she'll just raise the price, you know. And he's like, well, what? And he's actually, what does Jesper say? Like, oh, what a bitch. Not exactly, but something like what a bitch. He's like, well, that's what I would do. You know, like,
it's interesting because always in these worlds, and I'm assuming it's like that in our world too, where there's someone like Kaz who's trying to get this job with his smarts and his skills. And then there's other guys like Pekka who's like, I'm just going to beat the shit out of you. And it's like, you can either do this for me or I'm going to kill you. So which is it? Mm-hmm. It's like, really? That's not fun.
Literally two episodes in a row, Pekka's just like, listen, bro, here's the deal.
Yeah.
You can do this ass deal or you're dead.
Yeah.
What do you do? Go.
But we don't have to talk much about Jesper right now because I feel like he gets highlighted so much in the next episode.
Yeah.
But he's just such a fun character. Like when he's just having that casual conversation with Kaz and saying, like, we got to get an explosive expert for this job. He goes, you always want an explosive expert.
So fun.
Yeah, he's great.
Even they ask him, like, what would you do with the money? And he's like, fun. It's like for a couple months
that would
anyway.
Last for a couple months. Yeah. I honestly kind of hope we don't get much on his backstory, at least for the first season, because he seems like the kind of character who doesn't really need it.
Yeah.
Just a drifter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Is with Kaz. And he seems loyal because him and Inej, like they had that conversation how he has killed for her in the past.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And he said like relying on Inej has kept him alive still.
Yeah,
so
that's
I like their connection.
Kaz brings it up again saying, can we rely on her because she won't kill?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, I relied on her so far and I'm good.
Like it all, yeah. But that's pretty much the highlights from the Crows, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to talk again about Jesper with his gunslinger.
In the mirror?
When he gets Kaz into the...
Yes.
Oh, and in the mirror.
In the mirror is so funny. He's like such a ham. I love it.
But what the fact that I had seen episode two, the first app before you guys, and I knew we were talking about in episode one, you guys were saying like how awesome it was that he was a gunslinger. Mm-hmm. That scene is just so cool how fast he is and they can't even tell that it's him.
Yeah.
And then the smoke. It's
The smoke got me. I do just want to say, because I found one piece of evidence supporting the whole Shadowmancer thing, other than the fact that she was just reappearing and disappearing again. But when Inej was talking to Helene one-on-one, Helene says, you know, you must be very good with that business with the knives and the shadows that you do for Kaz to be paying so much. So she specifically said knives and shadows.
I have some kind of hint, too, that I won't. I think it's episode three that I want to talk to you guys about and see if I'm just pulling shit out of my ass here.
Do we have any confirmation that the Shadowmancers or whatever, Shadowbenders, can do anything with like that with shadows, or are
like
we just
disappearing,
like disappear and stuff?
There's a scene where I'm calling him the Darkling because that's what like they call him from the books, and that's
Kerrigan?
What they call
Kerrigan?
Him. Yeah, Kerrigan. Okay. Kerrigan. That's what they call him in episode two. I feel like there's a scene, and I can't remember the exact scene, where he kind of pops up out of nowhere behind.
It is. It's when he walks her to the king, right?
Like he
disappears.
Yeah, because she's talking shit kind of about like, and then he's like, oh, really? Yeah. Like, I don't know, man. It could be.
I mean, I just think it's a jump right now to just assume that like she could just be a badass ninja.
Yeah, no, personally, I still think she's a badass ninja right now.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
All right. We hitting the east of the fold now?
Hitting the east.
Am I oriented right?
Yeah. Nice. So I want to say that I think episode one should have ended with, I was going to call him Logan, Kerrigan testing her. That scene was so intense. And we already knew she was the shadow, whatever, the sun summoner in episode one. I thought that would have been an amazing way to end it. Like proof he's doing it. And then it's like, what are they going to do now? Cause you don't know which way it's going to go. It's like, what are they going to do with her now that she is the sun summoner type stuff? I thought that would have been an amazing end, but even so, in the very beginning of that episode, I was like, the music on this show is really good.
Yeah. They're the sound. I've pointed it out a couple times in my notes, more in the next episode. The sound team did a great job.
Amazing. Yeah. Good score.
Speaking of the scene where, you know, Kerrigan tests Alina, I like how they started this episode off with the flashback of Mal and her like hiding from the test. And I thought that whole scene was like very cute how they did it together, you know, and they just laid down in the cornfield or whatever so they couldn't be seen. But that's like perfect explanation as to why nobody knew this girl was the freaking sun summoner, you know?
Yeah. It's great parallel of them holding hands as kids and then getting found on the boat after the incident.
And
great stuff.
Speaking of that, we got some explicit demonstration of healer powers, and I think they're just strong. Like, they're way stronger than I thought they were going to be. She just heals her collarbone in like a second. Mm-hmm. You just hear the bones like kind of crunch a little bit. But
so I do like, however, though, that they've already established, well, in episode three, that Taylors are almost as rare as sun summoners, and they seem to be OP.
Right.
Like Taylor, definitely above healer. Yes.
Yeah, I would say so.
But yes, healers are definitely the shit. She just like started cracking her collarbone back into place, right? Yeah.
And you guys noticed that Grisha only treat Grisha.
Yes,
because Mal got carried off to the Medicus just to be tended to.
Right. She says, "Where's Mal?" And he says, or the late, is it Zoya? One of them says,
"Fuck Zoya, fuck
Zoya." Yeah.
Wow, I got a misread on.
I know.
From episode
I know.
One.
Yeah. But
that's why I didn't put her in the bank. Kill Mary.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's perfect, Kathleen. Actually, one of the Grishas says First Army goes with the medics.
Yeah. Okay. So First Army and then Second Army is pretty much how everyone just get discriminated against.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Did we have a name for the tailor?
Yeah.
Sappin.
Miss
Sappin.
I love her.
Yeah.
That was a great.
Yeah.
So back to the test, real quick. That seems a little too simplistic for me. Like, if you did that to an Inferni, is fire shooting out of their arm? Is
I guess.
I think it's only with that thing, though.
It says, remember, when they had the flashback, when the kid is explaining at the funeral home, at the
orphanage.
At the orphanage, how it works, they say they prick you, you know, and then they find out that way. So I guess it has to be some kind of special tool the Darkling has, or.
Because that'd be whack if you just like get a nosebleed, you just start shooting out.
Yeah, I mean,
Alina
got bopped.
No, it's not blood. Yeah, that's heavy.
Alina
hilarious.
Got punched in the face by that troll.
True. Yeah, right.
Just like light shining out of her face.
Oh, but I am just crossing my fingers that Kerrigan does not turn bad. Like, it feels too good to be true that he's just going to be a good guy.
No pun intended. He's definitely a little shady right now. And especially, I'll talk about my theory more in episode 3 because we'll get to it. But
I love him and love how he loves the Grisha and loves Alina, basically, because she's a Grisha. It's just that mindset's interesting. And he's just the powerful general who is basically the only one above him in the army is the king.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Jimmy before the episode said that the Darkling, Kerrigan, and Alina were going to kiss.
I said that in my bank, you'll marry.
Okay. All right. Yeah, yeah. But you said it also today. But are we saying that that's even on the table? Because technically she's only 17. So are we saying that? That's
back in the day, we're talking like Game of Thrones. Like,
yeah, true.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, Daenerys.
They're not
going to
hook up, but I'm sure that was, we've seen the part of the trailer you were referencing probably by now, right?
Oh, yeah.
It kind of looked like it. I mean, dude, I felt the sexual tension a little bit.
They look at each other. There's eyes, Kathleen.
But like, I ain't fighting that.
She's just too into Mal. I think it's off the table.
Oh, my.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. Brian, you said that you theorized that they might, Mal and Brian. Mal and Alina might just be actual friends, you know? Like, they might just stay friends.
That's what I'm still... So episodes 2 and 3 made it seem like it was a little bit more romantic in nature, but definitely not 100%. They could just be like essentially family. They're all each other has. So it makes sense that she would talk to her more than like I would address Luke as a friend. Mal and Alina are very close. So
yeah,
it might not be romantic though. And especially I buy into Alina and Kerrigan right now. Like, I did see some stuff there. Not Kerrigan, Kerrigan.
Yeah.
Plus, you know me, I ship Inej and Mal. That's what I call episode 1. I'm sticking by it.
I'm going to do a weird comparison because I don't even know why The Hunger Games is in my head, but you know how, like, Katniss and Gale grew up together?
Yeah.
You know that Gale was, like, in love and obsessed with her, and it was unrequited on Katniss's side. I feel like I see it on... They're both Gales. They both love each other, but they just haven't acted. That's what I'm sensing. But I think that they're going to be so separate for so long that something else is going to happen.
Kathleen,
they're going to fall in love with somebody else.
Something else about Hunger Games is there's a love triangle.
I know.
Peeta.
Kerrigan.
Peeta.
And Mal. And Peeta and Gale.
And Pekka.
And Pecker.
Nothing has happened in these first 3 episodes to make me care about Mal yet. And I...
Besides
I'm
that he's sexy
that
as fuck.
Like, he's good looking. I'm worried that idea, that narrative is getting gaining too much momentum in my head where it's going to be harder and harder for me to care about him.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, he just is Alina's side hoe.
Yeah. She's getting the treatment that typically, like, the female significant other of a male protagonist gets. Like, they are only there to play off of what happens to the protagonist, and that's what's happening to Mal right now. I feel like the scene where his two homies tell him not to leave and follow after Alina and tell him to stay here and try and become a hero and earn his way to the little palace, I think that's sending him kind of on his own journey. He's realizing, okay, I shouldn't be putting all of my effort into like tracking her down right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll get to her eventually. I just got to work on how to get there. I think he's going on his own hero's journey.
Well, I was just going to say, if he can somehow meet up with Kaz and the crows soon, I feel like that could be a path for him to be more relevant. And I would like that because their whole goal is just going to be to get to Alina, and that could work.
I buy into that. Yep.
Yeah.
Except it'll be like conflicting goals.
The end of what they're going to do with her, of course.
Right.
Yeah. We kind of talked about Zoya already a little bit, but she's just obsessed.
She's not
with
a bitch until episode 3, but
yeah. Okay. But these are the seeds being planted of how she's just wants to please the general, right? The shadow general, Kerrigan. And that's why she's going to hate Alina, because Alina's going to have all the attention from him. And so I guess she's just going to be another obstacle. Like,
she's a racist bitch.
Is she going to be someone that we need to kill?
Nah, man. She's just being petty. Yeah, she's just a little Malfoyian.
Yeah, I was writing notes on Zoya and how she talked, and I just I couldn't read her. Like,
because
she was,
annoyed,
but like nice at the same time. But now she's like kind of being a shady bitch.
I'm sorry. Zoya says that she's safe now, and he says not with the Grisha. And then she says she's one of them now, or one of us. And I thought when she said that, she had like some kind of contempt or something in her voice. Maybe I'm just saying it.
Yeah, I don't know.
She definitely doesn't like Alina. Yeah. So that much is obvious.
Yeah.
Bitch can fight, though.
She sure can.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's get to the scene where they get jumped by the Fjordans, or I guess the scene like right before that, where she's talking to the two guards in her coach. And she correctly points out, why are you guys transporting me this way with like a small platoon of people? Like, if you put me with the map makers, nobody would ever think twice. Like, this is the most dangerous way to travel, which she was completely right about. Sure enough, they get ambushed by the Fjordans, who have rifles, which take out Grisha like they're nothing. Mm-hmm. This was a very humbling scene for the Grisha, I would say. We haven't really seen them in action yet, but
I liked the battle strategies that they were using, right? Like just how they used the different types of Grisha and like use the, how many heartbeats you hear, like yeah. stuff like that for recon, where the squalor's at, like get them to, like, I liked the fighting scenes and how, you know, getting to showcase all their abilities like that. And I also really do like that. It's not just guns. I mean, it's not that if you're a Grisha, you just kill humans now because of the guns, equalizing it. And we get that whole scene where the leader of the first army is, or one of the guys that Mal's talking to from the first army, yeah. is saying how as time goes on and weapon tech upgrades, basically Grisha are getting more right. and more close to humans.
Yeah, I like the bulletproof coats they're wearing though. Those are pretty dope.
Which, could you imagine if all those people with good, that were good with guns were just also Grisha, right? Like right. it's just yeah. double better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's always funny to me. It's like people go in with a bulletproof vest or the coats, and it's like you just get shot in the head.
Yeah,
yeah, right. Like, yeah, just aim for the head.
Oh, and I'm sorry. We also have it established when she's talking to the guards before they get ambushed that Grisha had been in the past persecuted by everyone, and now they've gotten to a point where they're feared and protected thanks to General Kerrigan.
Another feather in his cap. He's the man. Yeah. He's the guy. But this is also when we get the first time we see Heartrenders actually using their abilities, right? Outside of just the lie detecting thing.
Crunching yeah. bones, man.
Dude, crazy.
That is unbelievable. You just start destroying their organs on the inside, and that's just what they're fighting as. Like, how do you even deal with that?
Well, I guess we do know how, because in episode 3, what's her, Nina gets dealt with, but you need 5-on-1 to be able to deal with it.
She was a badass, yeah, man. I did not expect that she could just fight like that.
But yeah, that is crazy. I mean, you were asking for more Heartrenders, and that is a ridiculous power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was good to see. And I think they're probably the strongest.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But anyway, so this comes to a conclusion. Smoke is thrown, and the Squalor is the first one to get shot. They're all calling for a Squalor to clear the smoke, which he's already dead, so they can't. And in the smoke, one of the Fjordans goes into the stagecoach and drags Alina out, is about to execute her when she is saved by General Kerrigan. And this is the first time that we get to see Kerrigan's powers. I thought it was pretty awesome, actually, just how the shade gets summoned, and the slice was pretty cool.
It was.
I did not expect it to be that cool. Like, I didn't know what I thought the powers were going to be, but that was amazing.
Yep.
And he just said, yeah, now that they know I'm here, they're all gone. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone ran away, basically.
Alina was so shook. She's like, how? Please explain.
Yeah.
And why?
Yeah. And what is he ends up saying? The cut, right? Is that what he called that attack?
Yes.
I don't know. That was weird. That, so it's just like a specific attribute that the Shadowbenders can use, or I guess he's the only.
He said
real
summoners can use them.
The summoners.
Yeah. But I mean, it is cool how she says, like, did you really have to cut the guy in half? Or that, and then he's like, well, would you rather me use a sword? I'm going to use what I got. You know, he's pretty much just putting
it
in
like
place.
That line.
You know,
it's good.
Like,
to that, she apologizes too. She's like, yeah, I guess you're right. Sorry.
Yeah. She's like, he's like, this is war, you know?
Yeah. So the people that ambushed them were the Druskella. They're like an elite corps within the Fjordan military. That's sole purpose is to go behind enemy lines to capture Grisha. This is where I think, Jimmy, like you were saying, Kerrigan lays out there's matter to everything, even air or shadow, too small to see. The cut is something a summoner can do, but it requires tremendous skill. And then he also establishes, you know, your light show that you did in the fold was visible from miles away. Like, everybody that was already in Rafka that were our enemies are currently being reassigned to just capture and kill you. So, you know, we're in danger. We got to get you to the little palace ASAP.
And then you ride with me.
Another insane, I think, piece of information we get here too is, I was completely wondering about from the first episode, was Kerrigan says that he can't go into the fold because if he does, he basically acts as a beacon for the Volcra. So that was my thing. I was like, why would they not send him across pretty much every time? You'd be safe. But yeah. Okay, now we know there's a specific reason he can't go through the fold.
So I wonder if he is safe from the Volcra himself. Like, he acts as a beacon to the Volcra, but would they fuck with him?
Yeah,
or just draw them in? Like, obviously they would attack humans, but would he be safe is a question I had. But obviously it doesn't matter. He cannot help from within the fold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Says him, though.
You don't trust him?
I don't trust him. I just think that when your name is like the Darkling, or if you're a shadow, like, I just think it's automatically that you're going to eventually be bad just by like,
it's the recency bias from the Dark King.
It's the symbolism though, of everything. I mean, when have you ever seen a good guy be like, you're like the shadow, anything?
That's
shadow
what I'm saying.
Powers,
it's going to be too good to be true for him to stay good for too long.
Nah, dude, he's good.
I hope so.
All right.
I'm putting all my money in that boy is good and
please
hot.
Please be good and hot. It would almost be predictable for him to be bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know, Brian, you said you have a theory later, and I feel like we might match up with it. So I'm gonna wait till you get to yours.
Yeah.
I mean, we're pretty much good with the episode two, right? Like, we end with that cute little symbolism of Alina and Mal laying in the beds, like separate, but like, you know, flashing back to their childhood, like hand holding thing. So that's pretty much how we end on this episode. Cool.
Cool.
Yeah, I think we're good.
All right.
I'll start us off because I love this glow up. Is that the first scene?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Episode three, the making at the heart of the world.
Yeah. And it's so funny because, like, I think it was in the end of episode two, she goes to bed and in like her new digs in this palace or whatever. And I was like, is she not going to shower first? Like, I literally thought that. I was like, well, maybe it's just like the cuts on her head that's making her look dirty. And I love, like, one of the first things those women said is like, have you ever bathed? Because I was like, I felt the same way. Girl, don't get in those clean sheets of that dirty ass body. But yeah, I love this glow up scene. And I love that she spoke the language they were shit talking her in. Like, it's always one of my favorite things when our protagonist like knows a different language that someone's not expect. They're underestimating our girl.
Daenerys, man.
Yeah. To greatest slay. That's a great one. Yeah. but yeah, no, I love that. And I love, what's her name again? Sorry.
Saffin
is great. I loved watching her heal. And I thought she was cool and fun. And when they were being racist about her being Shuhan, about her eyes, I love that she just like kicked them out. Was like, bye.
What are you?
Bye,
you're not going to bring up the ass shot that we get?
Yeah, we
do get an ass shot, but it's like through something, right? It's like through a sheet.
She was going to basically get bathed.
Yeah.
Blink and you miss it. But yeah, it was good. There was old Ravkin they were speaking. Yeah.
What'd that do for you, B-Toms, that ass shot?
Had an ass shot?
No, Valina.
Oh, a little bit. There was a little wiggle down there, but then it was like clouded by a veil, and then like the next shot was nothing.
Yeah, bro,
it was a glimpse of 17. What was to come.
She's 17.
In the show.
That was a trick. I got the fucking cops right behind me.
I thought she looked like Elizabeth Olsen. Seven. I was getting Elizabeth Olsen vibes.
I would have to look at her again.
Yeah, Olsen vibes, I'll say. Just Olsen, period. Not just
thank you for correcting that, because I thought she unfortunately looked more like the twins.
Yeah, like more Mary-Kate and Ashley style.
But very Olsen-esque. Yes, I'm 100% with you there.
Cool.
Did you guys talk about Alina's dream?
That is actually what happens first.
Okay, yeah. So the opening scene is just this buck with some crazy ass antlers going on, and then like at the last second it flashes to a flag with kind of like a symbol that looks like those antlers a little bit, and it's a reoccurring dream we find that Alina has been having, just seeing this buck with crazy antlers.
It's actually a stag.
There you go.
Shout out Harry Potter again.
Yep.
For real.
Okay, so she gets cleaned up and stuff, you know, and then this is when we have a really cool scene CGI wise, right?
So excuse me, I want to focus on, she's getting cleaned up by the tailor, and she says that testers found, Saffin this is, she says, testers found me when I was 11, but I've been practicing since I was 3. And she said, when I was 11, Kerrigan gifted me to the queen. Did you guys pick up on that? Saffin looks how old to you? Like 30 something?
Yeah, I would say that.
So about 20 years ago, General Kerrigan gifted her to the queen. Kerrigan looks what, 30 something? Should he not have been like 15 then?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a great call.
There's actually this one is more obvious than the other one, but I think there was one last episode that really ticked me off too. He's probably older than he looks, but this
like,
is
like
100%
creator of the fold 100 years ago old.
No, so this is going to tie into what I think me and Jimmy's theory is later. Does it have to do with the spiritual advisor?
It does, but at the same time, I was thinking, what if he's the same guy?
He is the guy that created the fold. It totally
he's the black heretic.
Yeah.
But I thought, wasn't it implied that she was a girl? Or am I making that
I think
up?
We
wasn't
were just saying that.
Okay, maybe we maybe we missed.
I think I'm the one who was like, I like to think it was a girl.
No, no, it was literally Inez. We're going through the conversation, and Kathleen said, I like to think it was a girl.
Okay. Yeah, no, it totally could be him, and that would be upsetting. But we got to talk through the King scene by that whole thing, because when she finally gets, this is Jimmy, where you mentioned that Kerrigan, when he walks her actually to the room, he kind of does the shadow appearance. Yeah, we think eventually. But anyway, they're in the Grand Palace, and the King and the Queen are just like unimpressed. They don't really care. They think she's just this little shoe girl who can't even speak their language. They have no expectations, apparently. And then, dude, I loved just Kerrigan just casually just flooding the room with shadows with just that epic CGI. And then he touches her, and her power just ignites into that ball of light. This whole fucking scene was probably the most expensive part of the entire episode, but it looked so good. It looked like Netflix money.
Yeah, so before that, I mean, he's pretty confident that she's going to be able to do it. Yeah. And I was like, why does he have so much confidence? Like, I thought for sure it was not going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, we get that later piece of information that he can amplify another Grisha's power. So, but I was like, why is this man so confident? She's going to fuck this up.
Yeah.
That's okay. So that is, I don't even know what to think about that he can amplify people's powers. Like, that has to somewhat be connected to the story that the spiritual advisor gives him.
Yeah.
Right?
With
the amplifying of the magic animal bones, whatever it was. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah.
It's got to be connected somehow, because who else? Like, we haven't, this is the first time we're hearing about this, and that just seems like a whack power.
Yeah.
It's definitely all connected. I do want to also point out that he kind of defined, it's not magic, it's science, or rather small science. I'm pretty sure small science is the term in the books that they refer to their quote unquote magic as. We do not conjure from nothing. We manipulate that which already exists around us.
Small science is such a cool word for it. I love it.
So two more things that I got from this scene that I think we need to talk about. And the first is just the, you know, progression of the political storyline in the background when the King gives the speech and basically says, you know, we have to get rid of the fold, unite our country again, stand together. And then this kind of connects to the opposition of the people west of the fold that Kaz stumbled by later in the episode. And they're kind of just wanting to be separationists and make their own sort of nation as the real Ravka or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's kind of going on in the background. Now we know the King's true goal to get rid of the fold for that reason and unite his country that he thinks he has ownership of. So,
right.
And then also, I just wanted to bring up the Zoya, Jesus Christ, when she like leans in and says, "What does anyone have the quote of what she says to her when she hugs her?" Just so
you reek of the orphanage, you half breed.
Yes. Yeah.
What the
it's like, fuck you.
That was crazy that they gave her two episodes of just kind of being normal, like especially with the scene with Mal in the first episode where it's like, yeah, I want to tumble with you, but she seemed like she was being nice too, like, you know, you can have the grapes and whatever. Ever,
yeah,
but what a bitch. And Mal's half breed too, technically.
She's just so threatened by Alina and her new, in this new power, and she, I mean, like, Alina has this for one day and she's already being like pampered and babied and whatever, like, maybe not, but given special treatment.
And I did take note, I don't know if you guys took note, it comes back a little bit later in the episode, all the girls, when she turns around, start hugging her and giving her all this love. And obviously Zoya is a bitch and says what she says. But then the guy in the red is kind of staring daggers at her. And then that's the same guy that later, when they're having the feast, he's like, you need to stop eating figs and do something, bitch.
Right.
I fucking loved that piece of dialogue. I thought that was great writing, because that's how you would react, right? You're waiting for this legend, this prophecy to show up, who's supposed to end the darkness that's like plaguing your country. And she's just sitting there like eating. And he says, like, every single waking moment right now should be training.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with that perspective.
She is annoying as shit. This episode and last episode, it's going to click that she's the Sun Summoner. Like, she can't do anything about it. And she has to do what she has to do. But like, why is it taking so long? There's no way that she could be 17 years old and not understand the magnitude of who she is, what this power could mean for like her country and the entire world. Like, fucking grow a pair, Alina. Learn how to summon the sun. Like, I'm tired of it already.
How has she not just been like constantly trying to do this?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She
had
priority.
Yeah, she does.
I think
have
the first when she wakes up, she starts like snapping. But that's it. Like, snappity snap snap, Alina.
I mean,
it's not how it works.
Kerrigan was straight offended when she was like, can't you just use a tool to give it to somebody else?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like,
you would give up your gift?
Yeah.
It's like Alice and Julia training magic.
Yeah. Bullshit. I know. Least favorite storyline?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
So, okay, we were just talking about Zoya, though. This leads us into the combat training scene. We meet Nadia and Marie, who are just other Grisha living at the little palace. We meet Borkin, who is the combat training trainer, I guess. And this is how the Grisha start every day, with combat training. And Borkin... I'm sorry, Botkin, not Borkin. What an awful name. Borkin is.
Borkin is his name now.
I just
though.
Trusted him because he was so confident.
Botkin. Botkin says, oh, okay, new Sun Summoner. Like, pick one of the other Grisha to fight if you know how to fight already. And she picks Zoya, of course, because Zoya was a bitch. And Zoya's been there for a while. She knows what she's doing. Definitely handles Alina. And then she gets the quip in. While she's on the ground, your tracker friend also liked it when I put him on his back. Alina didn't like that. Just gets up and rocks her. And I love that out of Alina. But then she got yeeted.
Yeah, I mean, I like that Alina still got up and tried to fight. And Zoya was said something like, you trying to back out? And I don't have the exact
dialogue. I don't have that in me.
Yeah.
I believe how it went down was Zoya said, scared, Potter?
Yeah.
And she came back and said, you wish. I didn't write down the exact quote, but
I think that was it, though. I think
as I remember it, I'm pretty sure that's what they said.
Well, we can't skip the part after Zoya uses the power. That's when we again see the stag vision quickly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This stag is going to be something. And I guess it gets defined by the spiritual guy, but yeah, that's going to be a big guy.
So that's the next scene. Right?
Yeah, that's the next scene. So she goes to the library, pulls out a book, and Creeper McCreeperton, aka the king's spiritual advisor, the Apparat, comes in and just says, ooh, I want to be friends with the Sun Summoner. Like, I see you're a knowledgeable person, well-read. Like, I feel like they didn't do him justice because they had the creepiest music playing in the background. Yes. And he was, like, being decent and friendly enough. I feel like they overkilled it.
Right. Too much. What's it called? A motif, right? They already established that negative vibe that comes with him and him just being a spiritual advisor. So I don't know. Clearly, he's not going to be a good guy.
Is he supposed to be Grisha, do you think?
No.
I wasn't getting that vibe.
So. Yeah, he just knows about it.
But he does drop some good information. We already mentioned it a little bit. I didn't take a lot of good notes here because
I have this quote because I think it's a thing. Okay. So the book that Alina pulled out was The Lore of the Stag, and he recognizes it, says, oh, you're interested in that. Well, let me save you some reading. It all began with one of the first Grisha in recorded history, the Bonesmith. He knew the Grisha would always be persecuted, and so he worked on a plan to magnify their power. He made creatures of his own finger bones, mythical animals brimming with power, attuned only to Grisha. They learned killing one of these beasts and melding it into their own body would amplify their abilities. Sometimes the gain was minor, but with the right binding, the increase in power was astonishing. Only the Grisha who takes its life can take that creature's power.
Mm. So is Kerrigan the Bonesmith? like an ancestor of him or something?
I don't think he's the Bonesmith, but I think he found one of these creatures and melded it to his being. And right. I think that would be an easy explanation for if he is immortality, but definitely the power amplification of those around him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's where my head's at. And that was really my theory. Jimmy, were you thinking the same thing?
Yeah, I was very similar to what you were saying. And I was kind of just adding the fact that I still think he's sketchy. And I think I was taking in like the immortal stuff that he was the original person who created the fold.
Why can't a good looking shadow immortal guy just be good in a fantasy every once in a while?
I mean, yeah, I just think that it's so obvious that him being the shadow person and her being the Sun Summoner, they eventually need to be against each other. I mean, the fact that he's helping her, I mean, I don't know. I mean, is it that obvious? Like, is it, you know, but
so I just discredit the theory that he was the original black heretic because that person is so well known, like that person couldn't just disappear and then another shadow mancer comes out of nowhere and people wouldn't be like, is that the same fucking guy? Sure it's a famous story about the downfall of the black heretic. Like,
but at the same time, if it's like, what did they say 100 years ago?
That's
or something?
What I was just going to ask. I can look back at my notes, but I forget.
He waited for the generation to die out.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's 100 years ago. He does it. And then he, you know, it's not nowadays where there's pictures and shit. Mm-hmm. It's like Game of Thrones, man. You know, like, old days. So he could just show up 20 years later and be like, what's good? And
You look exactly the same, and everyone's like, I can't be that guy.
Not many people would have seen him, though. That's the thing. True. It's not like there's pictures of him.
Well, maybe he was, if he was the one to create it, but he could still be good, and, like, his story arc can still be that he's trying to, like, repent, or, like, his guilt, do better, but then people find out that he's the original who made it, and then so people still hate him, but all he's trying to do is fix his past transgression
and
type shit.
I kind of buy that a little bit, because he seems very genuine when he looked at Alina, and I forget what part of the episode he says to her, like, our job, me and you, is to destroy the fold, and it seems legit. Like, I don't know, I bought it, so I would like that route a little bit more, where he is actually now good and regrets his actions of the past.
So what's the story way. that we actually know so far
about,
like,
the fold?
Do we know that the fold was created on purpose, or could it have been an accident?
I thought it was an accident.
Like, could he have done it by accident?
Oh, I like that too. That even plays more into that.
Yeah. I thought it was an accident, but of course, I've been misreading a lot of different things on this. But I also, like, I think it was in the article I read in the first, after the first episode, that I like how all the politics around the fold and all the different countries and stuff use the fold, like, to their advantage. Like, some of them wouldn't want the fold to go away because they use it in, like, for trade and, like, to keep the Grisha apart. Like, there were certain things I read and I was like, oh, actually that's kind of interesting that some use it to be like, this is a advantage for us that the fold is here, and other like, we got to get this the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the point Luke was making with the separatists from when Kaz is hearing them with when he's got the goat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're obviously saying, let's break off, you know, they're making us go through the fold. You know, if they it's easier for them to break off. If the fold stays, they can just decide to break off. You know, if the fold goes, the king can just come in and take his people back.
I would go as far as to say right here, it seems like the fold is a good thing for everybody except East Ravka.
Mm. Yeah, the fold is amazing. I love it. I hope we go into the fold sooner rather than later again.
The only other thing for the Alina storyline is Bagra, right? And then
Madam Hooch.
Bagra? Is that how you say her name?
Yeah.
Check me on that.
I
think it's Bagra. Yeah, I think it's Bagra.
And we didn't get much from this conversation. It's going to lead to more down the road, because she was just analyzing the shit out of Alina and her character and what being a Sun Summoner means to her and her past, and asking about her family and stuff like that. She doesn't have any self-confidence in the legend in herself, so she says, basically, come back when you do. Is there anything really we need to dive into there yet?
I just thought I liked it.
Yeah, she seems wise. She's going to be a good teacher for her. Or she's going to give her some good information.
Tough love.
I like how she said, you know, you're going to use fists, or you're going to use your powers here. Mm-hmm. You know, why the hell are you training for combat like that? Come to me.
Come to me.
Yeah, bitch. Nothing much. She's the one that, like, confirms that Kerrigan can amplify power. And Alina actually has a quip that says there's no such thing as human amplifiers. So maybe they're in this world. It's a known thing that objects can amplify Grisha powers. But she says, you know, Kerrigan can do it. Nothing
Let's
else
get
really
to the crows, because my God, this was such a good storyline. It honestly wasn't even a lot, like, based on just the amount of notes I took. I don't think it was a lot of screen time, but it was so important, and it was just all to build up to their mini kind of heist to get across the fold. And it was so good for every single person in the group. I think they all highlighted in some way, especially Jesper. He was an MVP of the episode.
Yep.
So the conductor knows of this person, Nina, who is a heart render who grew up in the little palace, and that is his inn, so that once they cross the fold, they can smuggle Alina out of the little palace and get her back west. So he also says she's a radical who thinks Grisha should be able to choose whether they serve the crown. She despises involuntary service more than she does Fjordan's. And here we get the flash to Nina, like, finessing the landlord, trying to get so she doesn't have to pay rent. Do we have any instant thoughts on Nina? I kind of really like the character, and it seems like she's going to be one of our main characters going forward.
You think so?
It seemed like they kind of split off a third plot line. Like,
yeah,
we were following her on the ship. Like, we're going to be following her as she goes to Fjordan, I think.
No, that's a good point. They made a decision to give her that second scene, so I didn't expect it, if I'm being honest. I thought she was just going to be that one scene and done, but maybe you're right. Maybe we will be getting some perspective of the other nation, who might be the end game bad guy. I don't really know, because we don't have a face of someone bad. Their king could be a character going forward or something.
So maybe her power isn't as broken as we thought, because she uses it to get out of the conversation and go back to her room when she's talking to the landlord, but then he ends up, after he's out of the spell, goes and sells her out.
Mm-hmm.
So you know.
I think it's a line of sight thing.
Yeah. Or at least touch. I think she does. She grab. Does she touch his hand when she's doing it, or is it just
no? Her? She like kind of magician casts a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
But dude, her fight scene was unexpected and badass. Mm-hmm. Just, like, can she do that because she's a Heartrender, or you think she just trained? Oh, because she grew up in the palace.
Yeah,
so that makes
she
sense.
Has combat training for her whole life. So yeah.
Yeah, she was awesome.
Yeah, she would have been able to take those four on. I think had it not been for whatever that weapon is, the rope that tied her up.
Yeah, and also I guess it does have to do with the hands too, and not necessarily just eyes, because when she's tied up, it's over. She can't use her powers.
Yeah, I didn't get that. Like, if there's some, you know, a lot of the times when there's powers like this, there's like material or something that negates your.
Soaked in holy water.
Yeah, like I don't think we saw anything like that. Yeah. So it must just be the free use of your hands.
Yeah.
So then we have Kaz and company arrive at Nina's room, and Kaz, smart as he is, surmises everything that went down. He's just like, oh, the Druskella came in. They find like a little amulet or something that is the Druskella. He's like, that makes sense. Maybe the landlord like tipped her off. That's why he was counting Fjordan money outside. So now they're just kind of like, what do we do now? He says, Inej, go look for any more danger outside. And she just like jumps off the balcony. Okay. She's gone.
Pause. So yeah. I had to rewind this like three times. Mm-hmm. There's like a noise that happens, and I swear she like materializes through the window. Like, I don't think it's right. I think it's just like a weird, like camera angle or something. But for like, that was the only thing that I thought of with the shadow stuff, because I would like you guys to rewatch it. For some reason, she's just standing there and he says, go. And then I feel like the window's closed, but then it's open when the next scene. So I think it's just she jumped out the window. But
you're
just
being dumb.
Yeah, I'm just being dumb. But that's like it just randomly like.
Brian's she could got totally me, just be a ninja. Like
Brian, you got me in my freaking head, man.
I can't tell what I want. I keep going back and forth if I want her to be a normal person or not, because, like, she just reeks of Shadowfender like in every single way, and I just don't see how. Like Kaz was saying, she's one of a kind. She's so unique. Like she has to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I will definitively say that she is plenty cool enough without the Shadowmancer. But if she is, that would just be a nice sprinkle on top.
Yep.
So they walk outside and the conductor's just like, okay, so Nina's gone. I guess we walk away from the deal. And Kaz, I love how our boy can just rally the troops. He's like, no, we're not walking away from this. I know what 1 million Kruger means to me. What does it mean to you guys? Freedom, retirement. And like a couple months of fun. So they're all still in.
Dude, after we see how Jesper is, definitely only a couple months of fun for him. Yeah. Losing all that money.
I was going to say they get their laundry list of things they need to go get for this mission to work. And dude, I can't stop laughing. Just the idea of Jesper when he's walking down the street and he just hears them gambling, stops for a second, keeps walking, and then they say something else and he's like, fuck it. And he just goes right in. He is such an asshole. Like there was just no need to do this, but. You know, that's his character, and he's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love him.
Yeah, we do.
Skip ahead to Kaz with the goat, and then we already talked about the separationist rally, but then this is when we get a little bit more about Inej, and this is probably going to be a little bit hot takey, but I'm kind of not that into the idea of family being like her whole thing. Like, it's probably going to be her whole character where she's looking for her brother, she's trying to confirm that her parents are dead, but... To me, I kind of like her more as the assassin.
Like a nomad assassin. Yeah. Like,
I don't know. I'm sure it's going to work for me eventually, but right now it seems a little bit boring.
I don't really have an opinion either way yet. I just think she's really cool and I'm in.
Obviously, I think she's really cool as well. I just think that she's going to be less and less of a mystery as it goes on, which is kind of a shame.
You are so cool.
You are so cool. But also, we need to talk about the fact that with the goat, Kaz sees the conductor doing some shady business.
Yeah, I didn't know what to take away from that.
I just took that he's doing some shady shit, man. I don't know if he's straight up, you know, exactly what they thought.
But it seems
was
like
that the conductor shaking hands with people?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, so what? Let's think of what motive the conductor could have to be dealing with people that are separatists.
So he makes his living and his money off of the fold. So him wanting the fold there and keeping the two countries separate and him thriving on the business of getting people from side to side could be enough motivation.
Yeah.
Because that's his thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, the guy who was preaching pretty much said that we're sick of being told to go through the fold to pick up supplies and stuff. I don't know if he necessarily helps them with that because he usually only works with refugees, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like you said, he still wants the fold to stay. I mean, it's also weird. Like, he seems like a nerd, like, you know, passive, but he has the same cuts that the other general's guy did. That, like, you take pride in the fact that you can cross the fold. I feel like there's some more to him that we're going to have to find out. I don't think he's as much of like a quiet nerd that we, that we're seeing so far.
Then we kind of talked about the Nina on the ship thing. I don't think we got much out of that, right? Except that we might be following Nina, and that's going to be unexpected and interesting. I feel like seeing the other country will be cool.
And I guess just the political background of Fjordan, they're taking her to trial as their government dictates. But she's like, how many Grisha have gone to trial in Fjordan and lived? And he just has nothing. She's like, exactly, zero. Like, you're taking me to death. What kind of trial is that? So, but OK, was I the only one thinking that this is going to be a plot line that we're going to follow? I feel like they are carving out a third thing for Nina.
I think so.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
Yep.
I fucked with her, too. Heart renders are super interesting. That power is just. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I agree with that. She might pop up in the Ben Kill Mary. Who's to say?
Ooh, I think you're to say, honestly.
To say.
Okay, so then we get Kaz, Inej, and the conductor arriving at, you know, the train, like right in front of the fold. Inej comments like, wow, you hear about the fold, but seeing it in person, it's crazy. And, you know, they're like getting ready to prepare, board the train. And then we see Jesper like running in. Don't leave without me, guys. Like gunshots coming from behind. He just like sprints through and they're off. I mean, they're scrambling to get in the train. Jesper only brought 16 pounds of coal. He needed 20 pounds. They're getting shot at. Like, there's no time to discuss it. They just got to go.
Dude, this scene was awesome, man. It was such a good way to just end the episode. And I didn't think they were going to get across the fold so quickly, if I'm being honest. I didn't think by episode 3 they would already be across. But, dude, Jesper was so fucking cool on this trip when just they're about to die, all the Volkers are just attacking them, and the conductor starts praying, and then just like the music drops and he just takes his couple steps and just fucking goes to town shooting the shit out of the Volkra. He's the man. I'm so convinced of his usefulness now, like compared to before. Like, I knew he was a sharpshooter, but if he can basically single-handedly get them through the fold and fight off the Volkra, like, he's so much more valuable than I thought he was going to be.
His eyes closed. So good. So good. Feeling it out.
With you saying you thought he was a fabricator, does that have anything to do with the way he can shoot, or is that just a skill? Like, I'm trying to think of powers.
Possibly. I was thinking, like, he took a deep breath, like, everything around him went quiet. Maybe he's a heart render and was listening to the Volker's heartbeat or something like that.
Yo.
I'm just speculating, like, or maybe he is just a sharpshooter. I don't know enough about the powers, but, like,
dude, that was cool.
Yeah, that's a good guess, because earlier, when in the previous episode, when Alina's like carriage got overtaken or whatever, they were like, "Listen to the heartbeats. How many people?" Like, that's a great connection.
No, it's awesome.
He's shooting, like you said, he's shooting and not even seeing through the roof. He's shooting through the roof.
Yeah,
at some points, without even knowing where he's shooting at.
I mean,
he's just in love right now, dude.
I am. I'm fucking in love. But look, doesn't it make it? That kind of takes away from how cool it is, though. If he isn't a heart render and he's just doing that, I don't know.
I love how all three of the crows were trying to decide whether or not they're Grisha and whether or not we want them to be Grisha. Yeah. Because they're all cool enough, no matter what.
Is there anything else to our boy the goat besides the fact that he's just a like stress-free goat?
Yeah, I don't know what that was, but that was kind of funny. He's like, it's for you.
Yeah, because he's like he's literally just like holding the goat and it, like. Dude, he's got the antlers like stag, the power stag, like whatever. There's power goat.
That could be the power goat. It amplified his abilities, and he
the
just
power goat, baby.
It would work. That theory gets crushed by the fact that Kaz is the one that got the goat, not the conductor.
Yeah, So the conductor said, "You need the goat," and he gives it to Jesper, and he's like, "Yeah, man, you need this animal,
he's like,
man.
It's so soft."
Yeah, he's like, "I love it."
Oh man,
that's the power goat.
So safe passage across the fold. Kaz and the crows are now in East Rafka on their way to Alina.
I was just going to say, I don't know how long the fold is, but it's got to be like, did we ever get a reference for how big the fold actually is across? Because
it's long as shit.
Yeah,
I heard that.
And I thought a plot hole was, okay, so in West Ravka, it seemed like this train was pretty well hidden, but it seemed like clear as day train tracks and that train leading into East Ravka. So like somebody should have seen that train. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he says like, they can't see the train. They can't see the train. It's like, it's just sitting right there. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
That was me. Whatever. I wouldn't nitpick it that much. I thought the scene as a whole was awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
We're going to get a clash, I think, already next episode of Kaz and Alina on the screen at the same time. So damn. I think we're just going to, we're pacing wise, we're heading there by episode 4. Definitely by episode 5, they're going to be in Little Palace, I think.
Don't you think that a collision course between Kaz and Mal is more likely than Alina at this point, just because he's right there? Or do you think next episode we're going to have them get to the Little Palace? I feel like there has to be some sort of obstacle for them.
Pacing wise, the show has been surprising me, honestly. Like, it seems like a lot of things happen quicker than I imagine most fantasy shows take it. So it would not surprise me at all if they meet up with Mal and Alina within the same episode.
Damn.
Could happen.
Damn.
Yeah, but we end on Alina writing to Mal, and I really liked this. I liked how she's going about just saying how scared she is and how they both grew up not believing in this one person coming to save them, and now she is that person and she's just overwhelmed as fuck. But it's so funny in these kind of shows. I'm so, my brain can't stop thinking about it. It's like, who are you giving that letter to? What is the mail system around here? Like, what is the postal system and how are they getting that? Like, even in Game of Thrones, I'm like, I get it. There's like some sort of like maybe magic to the crows or whatever. Yeah. But I'm like, ravens, whatever. What?
That shit's real life. You could send, they used to send pigeons,
carrier pigeons.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
It's because they're trained to be to one location as their home, so they take the pigeons away from that home. Like, you'll take a Winterfell pigeon and bring it somewhere else. It only knows how to fly back to Winterfell, so that's how they send them.
Okay,
so that stuff's, you know, real.
Yeah, but I still don't get it. But honestly, I really liked this end. How do they even train the birds? But anyway, I really liked this little speech from Alina to Mal. I really feel it. I know not Luke doesn't necessarily feel it between these two, but I think that they're going to try to be endgame. I think they're going to be a bunch of near misses. Like, other boys and girls are going to come in between them and whatever. Like, but like, I think it's going to be a bunch Kerrigan. Of near misses. Like Kerrigan and like Kaz.
Zoya. What if Zoya just pretends to be nice to Mal and tries to bang him just to piss off Alina?
I mean, yeah.
And she wants to bang.
She's already doing petty shit like that.
Yeah.
I don't really have any theories though. Like, it's, the show could go anywhere.
Yeah, I'm ready to watch the next two.
Honestly.
Yeah, I'm ready for the next two. My only theory was about Kerrigan, so I don't have anything else right now.
I think I
said all mine during the episode.
By our next podcast, when we do cover episode 4 and 5, I think we're going to be able to take a hard stand if Kerrigan's going to be bad or not.
Yeah, I agree.
Two more episodes of information on him is going to be enough to really solidify an opinion.
Only thing I need now is some Ben Gilmer.
All right. So last week we did Mal, Jesper, and Kaz. So this week we're going to switch to the girls. And we're going to go Nina, as previously mentioned, Alina, and Inej. Of course, our three girls, because I really thought Zoya was going to be built up to be able to be the third, but fuck you.
Yeah,
you don't get to be the third. Yeah, I honestly don't know. So someone else jump in first.
This is tough.
No, this isn't tough. I'm going to kill Alina.
I'm not going to kill
because she's the least attractive of the three, in my opinion.
Yay, dear it.
I also don't want the baggage of the Sun Summoner being around me all the time. That sounds like it's not good.
And you look
fun.
Like a little bitch.
Yeah. Instead, I'm going to be marrying Nina, because getting married to a Heartrender seems like the goddamn move. You'll be able to do whatever you want. And she can fight. She can protect me in this world because I'm a little bitch. So Nina seems like the shit. And she's like fiery. She's a character I want to see more of. And then I'm going to bang Inej because...
Hot.
Well, Luke, I'm going to say that I can't bang Inez, because I wouldn't make her do that again, because she was taken in and being a slave. I don't like that. That's not nice. So I'm not going to kill her, though. I'm going to marry her.
Nice.
Okay? I'm going to treat her right, because she deserves it. I don't know if Kaz will let me, but I'll try. And then I am going to. I'm banging the Sun Summoner, man.
Okay.
Because then I could say. A bang the Sun Summoner.
That's a good one.
Check it off the bucket list.
Yeah.
So marry Nina.
No, marry Inez. Kill Nina. Yeah.
Okay. She'll kill definitely. Nina. Okay. Definitely marrying Nina. She's a heart render. Like, whenever I wanted, she could just make me like so super calm. She could heal my injuries. Like, why would you not want to be married to a heart render? There's a million reasons why that would be useful. Plus, she's cute. Plus, she has a fiery personality. She's a schemer. Like, she was trying to get the landlord to like duck out on rent. Hell yeah. Give me Nina. I'm going to kill Alina because that chick has been annoying me these two episodes. I think she's coming back, but like, it should not take her four episodes to realize, okay, I'm the Sun Summoner. Like, I guess I have to do this to save literally the entire country. Like, get over yourself, Alina. You're dead. Inez, process of elimination. Gonna bang her, but it's not a consolation bang. She's a badass. She's awesome. Bang Inez.
Has anyone married Inez yet?
Me.
Oh, yeah, you yeah. did?
Me and B-Tom's had the same answer. Yeah.
So you got? Okay, so you guys convinced me because I didn't think I knew enough about
marry
Nina.
The heart renter now.
Yeah, but also, like, my thing against Nina is that, like, with the landlord, like, she obviously, like, morphed his brain.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
with her. And I'm like, I don't want her to do that shit to me.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to kill her just to make it
That's
spicy.
That's what I did, baby.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
We're going to be the same, I think.
No, I'm going to marry Alina just
That's
to switch
what I
it
did.
Up.
Oh, no.
That's what I did. I married them all. Me too.
I'm going to marry Alina because I think that I'm really rooting for her. Like, I see the potential and I see what you guys are saying, but I think she's beautiful and I love her and she's the Sun Summoner. So we'll get it going. And then I'm going to bang Inez, right? Yeah. That's who my leftover. Oh, so fucking cool. Let your hair down, girl. Let's go.
No one's out here killing Inez.
Nobody's going to kill Inez. Man. No.
She'll kill you. You don't want to cross her.
A knife will go flying.
There it is.
That's Ben Kill Mary. That's the pod. Keep an eye out for our continued coverage of Shadow and Bone. We're going to be covering each episode. Well, a couple episodes week by week, what do we have? Two more twos and then the finale on its own. Yep. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BingetownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
Love you guys.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.